Blog Talk Radio.
Connect you to real estate professionals that can help you in today's market to make the right decisions concerning your real estate endeavors. I am Yvette Preston, and I'm an associate real estate broker with Long & Foster, and I'm here with my husband, Jawanza.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
Yes, thank you for tuning in tonight. We have a great show lined up, and we will be discussing part one of a two-part broadcast on renovation loans.
I'm excited about this, aren't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. Tonight we will cover renovation loans for first-time home buyers and owner-occupants. And so if you're thinking about purchasing a home or own a home that you want to sell, this is a great show to learn about loan products that can help you to fix up that fixer-upper or that property that needs some TLC to get it ready for the market today. And next week, we will cover part two, renovation loans for real estate investors and non-owner occupants. So make sure you tune in for next week's show if you or someone you know is thinking about qualifying for a renovation loan as an investor.
I can't wait to get into this show. Once we found out that we were going to be doing this, we were both so excited because, you know, we're going to have a lot of powerful information to share with people out there. And the great part about it is we're getting this information from the experts.
Absolutely, and it is exciting, and it's a show I have been waiting for, and we are honored and privileged to have a special guest that is an expert.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, he's an expert. He knows how to educate the audience on renovation loans.
You know, it's so important, just got to stay here for a second, it's so important to get your information from experts because there are a lot of people out there that have information, but it just might not be applicable to you.
That's
all
right.
Information doesn't apply to you.
That's
you know,
right.
So you have to make sure that who you're talking to is who you need to be talking to, and so that's why we're really excited to be very specific in this series about who our target audience is, and so let's get to our special guest. Our special guest, everybody, for tonight's show is Richard Day, and Richard is a loan officer with Home Renovation. He's a home renovation specialist, with Assurance Financial Group, and there's a very important word in there, home renovation specialist.
That's
okay?
Right.
Okay, so everybody, you're going to be listening to a specialist tonight, so. By the way, during the course of this show, if at any point you have a question, like to speak to our guest, all you have to do is just press 1. We will call out the last 4 digits of your phone number, and then we'll bring you on, and you can talk to our expert tonight. So let's get to him. Richard, thank you so much for being our special guest today. It's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for agreeing to be our guest tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Yvette?
Yes. Well, we did mention that you are a home loan renovation specialist. But, Richard, can you tell us a little bit more about how did you get started? And I know you've been doing it for a while, but can you give us a little bit more information about your background? How did you actually get started doing renovation loans?
That's a great question, Yvette. So I was a loan officer in Baltimore City I started in 1988, and I've been doing loans for a few years. I was very young back then. I'm not very young now, but one of my realtors called me and she said, do you know what a 203K is? And I said, I've heard of those. And so I called my corporate office And I said, do we do 203Ks? I did a little bit of reading on them, and they're like, yeah, we do them. And 7 years later, when I left that company, and that was actually the year I left Baltimore and moved to Virginia, I was doing about 60, 70 of those loans, of 203K loans specifically a year. And then when I moved to Richmond, Virginia, I made the decision that I wanted to solely focus on doing that business. And I mean, I still can do other loans, but the majority of the loans I do are renovation loans. And I think that the reason, I mean, I like doing them for a variety of reasons, but my number one reason is that I just like old houses. And so it fits well with that. And I have done 4 renovation loans personally, all on very old homes. The most recent one was built in 1853. So
wow.
I not only do the loans, but I practice what I preach. I'm a borrower.
Okay. You know, Richard, and that's the reason why we definitely wanted to, you know, have you come on and talk about renovation loans, especially for first-time home buyers and owner-occupants, because being a real estate agent myself, and I specialize working with first-time home buyers and with investors, in this market today, it's really tough to find properties, sometimes for first-time home buyers, that are move-in ready or even just affordable. A lot of people are looking at new construction, and everybody loves new. So, you know, I wanted to definitely explore the opportunities for my listeners and my clients to be able to find homes, just like you said, because there's a lot of character in older homes and being able to come in and just be a part of that process to renovate and still have the opportunity to, I guess, upgrade a property to, like, if it is brand new. It just depends on how much you want to do. But definitely this is a product that I think that a lot of people have been interested in. People ask me that question all the time, but I'm definitely glad that you're able to really educate us on renovation loans tonight.
And you know what's so interesting, Richard, when it comes to 203K loans and renovation loans, I know for myself personally, the first time I heard the term 203K, the first thing I thought about, and I don't know why I thought about it, but the first thing, before I even knew what it was, I thought somehow it was a commercial real estate loan. It, for some reason, I thought it was for, you know, properties or something. I don't know why, but I did. So just so that our listeners who may also have, you know, preconceived notions about what a 203K is, what exactly is a renovation loan? And how does it differ from a reconstruction loan, or is there a difference at all?
There are several differences. First of all, renovation mortgage. And by the way, I'll just preface this by telling you and the audience that renovation. I tend to not use the product labels, the program labels. You know, 203K, Choice, Home Style, et cetera. I tend to just use the term renovation loan. So the difference between, we'll start with just that basic premise. The difference between a renovation loan or a renovation mortgage and a reconstruction or a construction loan is a renovation loan is always a one-time close loan. So it's one and done. And a construction loan is typically a two-time close loan. I mean, there's some banks that will market their construction loans as a single close construction loan, but there's always some sort of a modification or change in it. But some of the benefits of renovation versus construction are, you know, especially with the government renovation loans like an FHA 203K or a VA or a USDA, is that the down payments are lower. Construction loans generally require more down, typically 10, sometimes 20% down. A renovation loan under the 203K banner is only 3.5% down. 203K loans, because they are an FHA product, are more liberal on credit. They're more liberal on qualifying ratios. They allow larger gifts from gift contributors or donors, and also larger seller concessions, so the seller can contribute towards the borrower's cash to close. But basically, in a nutshell, the definition of a renovation loan is it's one mortgage that wraps purchase price and renovation cost all into one loan based entirely on the future value of that home. So in other words, when a lender does a renovation loan, they're appraising the house as if all the work is already completed. So they're basing the loan on the future value and the future condition of that home.
Okay. So when you mentioned FHA 203K, is that one particular product of a renovation loan, and there are other types of products? Is this the main product for first-time home buyers, the FHA 203K?
The first part of your question, 203K is just one product. There's only about a small handful of products under the renovation moniker. 203K is the granddaddy. 203K loans have been around since around 1970. It was a product that was largely ignored until the late 80s, when pockets of 203K lending started to percolate in different cities. One of the four biggest cities to really spearhead and do a lot of 203K loans happened to be Richmond, Virginia. The other three cities are elsewhere in the country. But since then, other products, there really are three other products that I think are well-suited for first-time home buyers under the renovation moniker. VA renovation loan, which is a relatively new product. It's only been around for about 2.5 years. It's currently unavailable. It was suspended when the pandemic started, but I'm hopeful that the VA renovation product will come back maybe this summer. I haven't got any intel on that, but hopefully it'll come back soon. My advice for any veterans that are listening, call the VA and tell them to reopen that product. The Home Style and Choice, which are the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac conventional versions of renovation loans, they both allow borrowers to use those products under their Home Possible and Home Ready brands, and those are programs that are you're basically marrying a Home Ready or a Home Possible loan with the Choice or the Home Style renovation loan. And what those sub program labels allow borrowers to do is, if they make under 80% of area median income, which is roughly about $71,000 a year, they can do those programs with as little as 3% down instead of the normal 5% down required for conventional loans. And you compare that to a 203K, 203K requires 3.5% down. So you've got 203K, you've got VA renovation, and then you've got Choice and Home Style with both of their first-time home buyer add-ons, if you will. And then the last product that I think is really, really good for first-time homebuyers under renovation is USDA renovation. USDA renovation, like the VA renovation, is also relatively new. It's only been around for a year or two. Works very much like a 203K, but like a VA renovation loan, USDA renovation, if the borrower qualifies, can get a property or get the mortgage with zero down.
Okay, zero down. So that USDA product sounds similar to the USDA, just the basic, not a renovation loan that
correct.
But you have to,
yes.
A rural area, is that right?
Yeah, the property needs to be in a rural area, and whenever somebody calls me for a pre-qualification, and if I know that the property is not an urban or a densely populated suburban area, one of the first things I'll do is I'll plug the address of the property into the USDA search engine, and it'll tell me within a few seconds if they're eligible for USDA financing. And of course, if they are, then that's another loan product that the borrower could potentially choose from.
That's wonderful. So I guess the job of the loan officer is to find the best product that suits that individual. For instance, as you mentioned, that VA loan is for veterans, and then depending on where you're purchasing the property, to take advantage of whatever the best loan product or renovation product that's available. So you're actually, again, for those that are listening, and for it to be clear, this is one loan. So you are actually, when you're looking to purchase a particular property and that property needs some work, then you can look at a renovation loan where you don't have a second mortgage. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. That is absolutely correct. It's all one loan. It's all one payment. It's one set of closing costs. It's one and done.
Question, Richard. Are there any scenarios in which a property just would not qualify for the renovation loan just because the work just doesn't warrant it? Somebody might think that they need a reconstruction loan, but then, you know, once the appraiser or the home inspector or whoever would determine that, looks at it, you know, it's like, well, there's not really a need here for type of product. Are there scenarios in which a loan might not be approved just simply because the work just doesn't warrant it, and who would determine that?
That's really a wonderful point. So, yeah, not every borrower needs a renovation loan. That's dead on. That is completely accurate. I've had borrowers over the last 29 years that I've been doing these loans, 30 years now because I did my first one in 1991. I've had borrowers call me thinking they need a 2 or 3K or thinking that they need a home style or whatever. And after I take a holistic approach to every borrower I talk to, and I look at their complete, you know, one of the things, and I'm sure you both know this, you know, you're talking to a new, you know, buyer, and they're laser focused on, you know, one or two questions, and it's difficult to really advise them without knowing more about their situation. So get to go off of your question, Juwanza, I've had borrowers call me and say, we want to do a 2 or 3K loan. I read about them online, and it's a perfect loan for me. And I go, okay, they tell me about the house, and let's say the house is, the house is actually in really pretty good shape, and the only thing it needs is a new heating system. And so the heating system, let's just say it's going to be, you know, $7,000. And so I do a profile on the borrower, and I deduce that, you know, they actually could they could do what's called an escrow repair loan. And an escrow repair loan, which is actually also a renovation product, but we probably don't have enough time to get into that tonight. But it's a product in which the lender, and almost every lender can do this, not every lender does, but the lender can basically put a small amount of money, not $80,000, but, you know, $8,000 is within the guidelines usually. They can put that into escrow. And what that allows in that particular case is the borrower can do a regular mortgage, still get the house, still close on it and everything else, and still get the money for the heating system without having to do a 2 or 3K or a home style or whatever. And let me tell you why that's important. The biggest reason is that renovation rates are higher than non-renovation rates. They're higher because renovation loans are riskier. We're lending on value that doesn't yet exist. There's more work involved, so we have to pay more staff to do, you know, get a renovation loan from, you know, A to Z. So if I tell a borrower, well, you know what, if we do an escrow repair loan instead of paying, you know, 3.5%, you can get 3%, and you're still getting the heating system, why would you not want to do that? And then they're like, oh, yeah, that if that works, that's fine. Now, if the renovation budget starts to balloon, or you brought up the point of an appraisal. Let's say appraisal comes out and the appraiser finds a whole bunch of other things wrong with the house besides the heat or in addition to the heat, then we may shift gears at one point during the consultation and go, yeah, a renovation loan is probably the better product for you, and it's going to cure all of those problems. Another example, which might even be a better example, would be the house just needs cosmetic upgrades, and the house otherwise will pass an appraisal just fine. And the borrower, again, read about a renovation loan online or a 2 or 3K online, and they decided that's what they want to do. And then I'm like, you know what? You qualify fine, and you actually – the work you want to do is probably only going to be, you know, $15,000, and you've got $40,000 in the bank. You know, my advice would be just do a regular mortgage, get a better rate, and just pay for that, you know, out of pocket. And sometimes they're like, yeah, that sounds fine. We want to do that. And other times they're like, well, no, we had other plans for that money. We really want to do a renovation loan. And, of course, if the consumer really wants to do a renovation loan, I'm happy to oblige them.
You know, and that's really, really good information that, you know, and I think that is the job of the loan officer, because, you know, that's why I let the loan officer do what they're supposed to do to help, you know, my clients, because, of course, again, I'm a real estate agent. I'm the one that's finding the property, but I have to help my clients to find make sure that they are pre-approved and also connected with the right person that can help them to find and to acquire the property that they're looking for. I want to go back to what you had mentioned about the down payment, the 3.5% as it relates to a FHA 203K, or 3% when it comes to different renovation loan products, that down payment. With a renovation loan, is a person able to also apply grants? Can that be a part of the down payment closing cost? Can that be also attached to that renovation loan?
That's a sticky question, but I'm going to tell you why. I'll break it down for you. So the short answer is mostly no. But, and I'll tell you why. So I used to do a ton of loans prior to the mortgage meltdown, you know, 2008, 9, and 10. I used to do a ton of loans with down payment assistance, renovation loans. And it was totally common. It was not a big deal. There were different housing agencies that provided down payment assistance. Organizations like NeighborWorks and Home, Housing Opportunities Made Equal. In Baltimore, there was a bunch of nonprofit housing agencies that secured and dispersed down payment assistance. And that's all great. But as part of the change in the federal laws post-mortgage meltdown, the feds basically said that anytime somebody gets a grant, the house has to be in you know, decent shape.
Yes,
so,
move-in ready.
Move-in ready, exactly, move-in ready. So it's a very tiny window in which the property could, they could buy the house, do a renovation loan, and get down payment assistance. It would have to probably be mostly cosmetic stuff and be a fairly small budget, but if the house needed too much work and it wouldn't pass the muster of the housing agency, then they would probably decline approving the grant or the down payment assistance for the buyer. And that's unfortunate. I don't agree with it, but it is what it is.
Okay.
I also want to give the callers an opportunity to join the conversation. If you're listening by phone, all you have to do is just press 1. I'll call the last 4 digits of your phone number. If you have a question for our special guest, Richard Day, then we can bring you on and you can ask your question or make your comment. Richard, I got a question, just out of curiosity. When it comes to renovation loans, I don't know if you know the ratio, but it would, you know, my thinking would be men probably would get those more than women. A first-time homebuyer, a female may want to move in ready. She may not want to go through the whole fixing it up. And, you know, a guy, he might feel like, oh, I can fix this, I can fix that, I know somebody, or, you know, he may look at it as a project. I mean, have you found that to be the case, that men get these loans more than women, or is it just kind of like just pretty much the same?
Based on a need.
You know. Honestly, I have no idea. No one's ever asked me that question, but I'll tell you right now that a lot of women do these loans. And I tell you, I think one of the drivers for that, Joanna, is that, you know, prior to, you know, the late 90s, there was no such thing as HGTV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I really think that all these home improvement shows, you know, HGTV, DIY, This Old House, et cetera, a lot of these shows have made people much less gun-shy about, you know, taking the leap and buying a house that, you know, needs work. And, of course, as Yvette, as you pointed out earlier in the show, with inventories being tight, you know, for a lot of borrowers, it's like, you know, if I don't buy a renovation, I'm not going to buy a house because they can't find anything that's going to really meet their needs. So, yeah, it's really all over the place. I've honestly never tracked it. But, you know, just going, you know, I'm thinking about it, you know, thinking right now as I'm sitting here staring at the ceiling, I would say it's pretty darn even between male, female, married, unmarried, you know, it's really, you know, families, single people, it's really kind of all over the map. I'll tell you a quick sort of funny story that whenever I talk to a married couple about renovation, I always tell them that one of my goals is not only to get them their loan, but that they stay married through the renovation. Because
yes.
it can put a strain on a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that is great information, because just the home buying process is stressful for a lot of people, and then on top of that, you know, we're talking about a renovation loan, so that's why educating, you know, a person on this process and definitely you being able to share this information with us, the listeners today, will, I think, help to prepare them for this if this is something that they want to do. And as you mentioned, and we are talking about now, because the inventory is so low, this may be the only option for some first-time home buyers.
And Richard, without
right,
me taking
right.
the conversation somewhere else, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, you brought up risk. Can you talk about that for a second? Because I think that is such a very, very important point. Oftentimes, you know, buyers are being asked for a lot of information when they're filling out the, you know, they're getting these documents, they have to sign this, sign that, and then, you know, they have to fill out a lot of stuff. Some things they might be asked more than once. And with a loan, they're getting potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. What role, it's a rhetorical question, what role does risk play in this? How important, and can you talk about that with the loan being granted, with risk being the underlying factor in the determination? The bank wants their money back. I mean, so can you talk about risk?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, let me tell you this, and you might be surprised to hear this, but I read a statistic years ago, and I'm assuming this is still true. I don't know why it wouldn't be, to be honest. FHA, VA, VHDA, Fannie Freddie, all these housing entities, they track mortgage performance. And what does that mean? Mortgage performance is out of every 100 loans or every 1,000 loans, how many of them go to foreclosure? How many of them have regular delinquent, you know, payments and so on? And the stat, this is a while ago, but the last stat I read was something like, 4.2% of every mortgage written, you know, goes to foreclosure or something, you know, and it fluctuates month to month. the healthier the economy, generally the lower that number goes, and vice versa. Renovation loans go to foreclosure about one third as often as non-renovation mortgages.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. So they basically perform better than non-renovation mortgages. And I'll tell you why I think that is. And most of my contemporaries, I'm sure, would agree. Number one, when somebody buys a home and they do, you know, a substantial renovation to the home, it's more personal for them. They're more vested in that house. That new kitchen was designed by, you know, by me. I own that house. I bought it. I hired a contractor, but that was my vision for that house. They're more personally attached to the house. So,
absolutely.
You know, why would they let that house go unless something, you know, catastrophic happened, you know, financially or, you know, whatever. A spouse passes away or they lose their job or, you know, whatever. But by and large, they are much more attached to the house and they protect that investment more staunchly than a regular borrower homeowner. But the other driver is that the majority, and this is not as true right now as it was, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, but more renovation borrowers typically have more built-in equity. So in other words, I'll give you an example. Let's say somebody buys a house, we'll just use a real simple number. Somebody buys a house for $80,000 and they borrow $20,000 to renovate. So they have $100,000 vested and it appraises for $112,000. So they've got $12,000 built-in equity in addition to their small down payment. Whereas if they bought a move-in condition house for $100,000, they probably would only have the only equity they would have would be the down payment they put down. So
yes.
they have more equity in the property from the point of the completion of the renovation, and so they certainly don't want to let that go. So they have a more valuable property with less money owed on it, and they're more personally attached to it. Of course, those mortgages are going to perform better, but I want to segue into something, Juwanza, you said about you know, the qualifying aspect of these mortgages and the risk associated with that. There is no difference for most lenders. Now, some lenders have internal overlays, but we're at Assurance, we don't have this. There's really no difference in the amount of documentation we're going to ask for from a borrower. It's the same, you know, the pay stubs, the W-2s, the tax returns, you know, et cetera. All that's, as far as qualifying, the documentation we ask for is the same, the ratios are the same, and so on. So there's no difference as far as the qualifying guidelines. All of those are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so the terms, a normal mortgage term, the 15-year,
30-year, yeah, 30-year fix, 15, yeah, all that's about the same. And, you know, I'll tell you, to simplify things for your listeners, you know, again, going back to the example I just used, somebody could buy a house for, you know, $200,000 move-in condition, or they could buy a house for $150,000 and borrow $50,000 for renovation, also equal to $200,000 acquisition. So that's I treat that renovation scenario as a $200,000 purchase price, even though the purchase price is really $150,000. You know, the fact that they're adding $50,000 to it, then I look at the whole pile of money for the loan, and that's how I view it. And that's, by the way, that's also how the down payment's calculated. The down payment's calculated off of the total acquisition, not just the sales price. And some of the closing costs will be calculated off of just the sales price, but a lot of the closing costs will be calculated off of the total loan amount as well.
Okay, and so you said the total acquisition, which is based on the appraiser's value, the appraised value renovated? Is that what you're basing it on, and that's the amount of the loan?
No. The acquisition cost is the sales price plus the renovation budget. That's what we're looking at. The appraisal just has to come in at or above that number. But from the lender's standpoint, we are looking at the sales price plus the renovation budget, and we bundle those two things together into one pile of money.
So that's how you could possibly have more equity going into a renovation loan, because it may appraise for more based upon just, I guess, how much the total acquisition cost is?
Well, based on the comps. I mean, if somebody happens to get a property in a particular neighborhood, you know, below market, and then the renovations that they're applying to that property, you know, let's say they're being smart about the renovations and they don't, you know, put in a gold-plated toilet seat or anything like that, that they're doing good renovations and they're watching their budget, then the appraiser might look at that property and go, yeah, if you do A, B, and C to that house, it'll be worth X, and X happens to be above the acquisition cost. So anything between acquisition and that appraised value is their built-in, you know, equity. That's their gravy.
Okay.
Awesome. I've learned a lot about renovation loans just from the time that we've spoken today. I mean, I'm looking at them totally different than I did prior to this.
And so am I. And because, again, that's why we have Richard on, you know, on today to even educate us. And definitely this is great information. Richard, you did mention something about interest rates. So the interest rates, that's definitely something that's important to buyers. Can you just talk about that a little bit? What's the average difference in the interest rate for a normal traditional, I guess, FHA loan versus a renovation loan?
Yeah, so typically I would say on average, I would say renovation rates are about 0.5% higher. However, for really, really, like if a borrower has a really, really good credit and they put a little bit more money down, like let's say they do a conventional renovation loan and they put, you know, 10 or 20% down instead of just 5% down, that borrower will have a little bit less of an add-on than somebody that puts the minimum down and has, you know, a credit score that's in the lower end of the range. But, yeah, on whole, I would say across the board average is about 0.5%. So we're in a, you know, rates have escalated recently as they typically do in the spring. And I think I saw yesterday morning the average national 30-year fixed rate for the whole country is like 3.29%. So a renovation rate might be 3.75%, you know, 3.75%.
Mm-hmm. That's not bad. I mean, because I know especially at one time years and years ago, you know, compared to what interest rates were, and we're still in a great time now to purchase.
I remember in the early 90s, like they were 7.7, and that was considered good, you know, great.
Right. Well, speaking of that number, the average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage starting from 1970 to now, the average for that 50-year window is 7.01%. And, of course, you probably are younger than I am, but – you know, in the early 80s, they were like 16%.
Mm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yes. So, I mean, definitely people should take advantage of these interest rates, and definitely if a renovation loan works for you, that's definitely, it sounds like a great option, especially if you are not in a position that you want to actually build. You know, we're talking about 6 to 8 months, so that's also another good question, Richard, concerning the time frame and how long does it normally take to go through this process? And if you wouldn't mind just kind of explaining to us the loan process and the stages and how long it takes.
Yeah, Yeah, so so years and years ago, back in the probably mid-90s, after I'd done probably a few dozen of these loans, I was, you know, it came readily apparent to me that there were really five, you know, main steps of a renovation loan. So, and this is actually on my website too, which I'll share with you in a while. So once a person writes a contract on a house, the five steps are, step one, apply for the mortgage, and there's no difference in applying for a renovation loan than a regular loan. It's still, like I said earlier, W-2s, pay stubs, bank statements, a toenail, a blood sample, you know, all the stuff that we need. The second step is getting a contractor bid, and that's really the hardest step. Because that contractor bid and the amount of that budget for renovation is going to be a key driver in the whole transaction. The third step is appraisal. Main thing to remember is we can't order, no lender can order an appraisal without the bid. And that's a very key distinction between a renovation loan versus a non-renovation loan. Regular, you know, non-renovation loan, you apply for the loan, you order the appraisal right away. On a renovation loan, we have to have that bid because the appraiser has to know what's going to be improved, what's going to be renovated and fixed, so that they can determine that future subject to value. Step four is what I call project management. Project management is where we validate the credentials of the contractor, so we make sure their license is adequate, their insurance is up to date. And we check, you know, most lenders do pretty much the same thing. They check some references. Some lenders will pull the contractor's credit. Some lenders don't. You know, every lender has their own process for that. But mainly it's produce a profile about the company, copy the license, copy the insurance. And then most lenders have a separate department that does that contractor validation piece. So once the first four steps are done, the loan has been applied for and approved, all your condition, the borrower's conditions are in, the bid's final, the appraisal's complete, the contractor's been cleared, then you go to step five, the final step, which is close and renovate. And so when you go to closing, the seller is paid, you are paid, the realtor's paid, and then the buyer now owns the home. And the lender puts all the money for the renovation into an escrow account that they earn interest on. That's part of federal law. They have to earn interest on the escrow account. And then the day after closing, the contractor, the borrower's contractor, can begin to break ground on the renovation and all that. So there's two timelines I'll address here for you. The first timeline is from the day they apply to closing. And I would suggest 45 days at minimum. I think 60 days is more comfortable for most borrowers because, remember, the borrower is going through the steps of getting a contractor and a contractor bid. And most borrowers will get, you know, two, three, four bids before they settle on the contractor that they want to go with. So I think 60 days is more comfortable, but, you know, 45 to 60 days, I have closed renovation loans, believe it or not, in as little as 12 days. That was pre-TRID. I shouldn't say TRID because most of the audience may not know what that is. Let's say pre-mortgage meltdown. So there weren't as many steps involved prior to that. Now there's more steps. I would say post-mortgage meltdown, my shortest close was probably 21 days. So 21 days, but, you know, 45 to 60 days is comfortable. The second part of your question, how long, once the borrower closes, how long do they have to get the renovations done? The blanket answer to that question is 6 months. But honestly, if it's a small renovation, you know, let's say it's $12,000 or $25,000, you know, anything under $30,000 or $40,000, it really should be done in 2 to 3 months. Conversely, if it's a really big renovation, like the last renovation loan I did personally was $305,000. that's going to take every bit of 6 months, and in my case, it took way longer than that. So, you know, any substantial project that is going to, you know, like 80, 90, 100,000 and above, yeah, they're going to take 6 months and maybe a little bit longer. But the guideline for most products is 6 months to have the renovations completely done.
Completely done after closing.
After closing.
Okay.
When it comes to securing a bid, now the buyer, let's say you take a buyer and they're like, I don't know anything about this process. I don't know who I can get to come and look at this, you know, this work that needs to be done and, you know, tell me what's good and what's bad. I mean, a buyer might just go with the cheapest. You know, a buyer might just say, well, so-and-so company A is less expensive than company B. You know, I'll go with them. Is it, and I think I know the answer to this question, but a lot of listeners may not, when it comes to them asking the lender, you know, would that be something that you as a loan officer could help them with? I mean, would that be something if your client says, listen, I don't even know where to start. Can you recommend a company? Would that be outside of your realm of responsibility? Would that be a no-no?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I get that all the time. The lenders are prohibited from referring contractors. That's on the books. However, I do keep, and we are allowed to do this, I do keep a list of previously approved contractors, and as long as the borrower doesn't come back to me months later and go, you know, oh my, they were horrible and they just did, you know, really substandard work and blah, blah, blah. Unless that happens, I will leave them on there. So I do have a list of previously validated contractors that I'm happy to share. But I also, you know, tell borrowers, and I try to tell them this before they write a contract on a house so that they're going in with, you know, eyes wide open and they're as prepared as possible. There's the NARI, which is the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. There's a Central Virginia chapter for NARI, and I can't remember the name of the website off. But if you just Google NARI, you know, if your listeners Google that NARI Virginia, it'll probably be the first thing that pops up. And it's like NARIcentralva.org or something like that. They are a standards organization, which means that every contractor that belongs to NARI, they basically take an oath or a commitment that they will do quality work, they will stay within budget, they will get the job done in a reasonable, you know, time frame, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, contractors that belong to NARI are generally a safe bet. There's also a sub-chapter of the Virginia or the Richmond Home Builders Association called the Remodelers Council, and contractors that belong to the Remodelers Council generally abide to the same, you know, kinds of standards. And then, of course, I always tell people, you know, talk to your family, your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors. You know, do you know a good general contractor? Talk to your realtor. Your realtor often knows good contractors as well. And, you know, but, yeah, utilize all those things. And, you know, obviously the borrower should check their references as well, even though the lender may also do that. They should go to the Better Business Bureau. In Virginia, contractors have to be licensed through DPOR, D-P-O-R, and they can go to the DPOR site and see if there's any, you know, complaints against the contractor. So there's lots of ways to validate and verify the quality of the contractor. And I do agree with, I think, what you were alluding to a moment ago, and that is, yeah, it's not always, you know, I think most people know this, it's not always the best practice to go with the cheapest. Because, you know, as we all know, you get what you pay for, and you may not want the cheapest quality renovation.
And that's why it is important, as you mentioned, to get, I guess, quite a few bids. And then you can, after you do your research on the contractor, then you can kind of base your decision on, you know, looking at several bids, several options. I want to just definitely mention this again. This show is part one, home renovation loans for first-time home buyers and owner-occupants, because the loans that we're talking about today is specifically for first-time home buyers, which means you plan on occupying the property. So that's a big difference. Can you talk about that a little bit, Richard?
Yeah, sure. So every product I've mentioned tonight is available to an owner-occupant. Not every product is available to an investor or a non-owner-occupant, and not every product is available to a second home or a vacation home buyer, borrower. So every product we've talked about tonight, I mean, every product pretty much is available to owner-occupants, so that's good for the audience tonight. And let me make the distinction between owner-occupant and first-time homebuyer. First-time homebuyers are clearly going to be owner-occupants in almost every case. But repeat homebuyers can use these as an occupant as well. And the distinction, quite simply, is an owner-occupant is somebody who's going to buy a house, renovate it, and live in it. That's their intention. That's their goal. That's the plan. A second home borrower is somebody who's going to buy the home and use it only part of the year for a vacation property. And a non-occupant or an investor is somebody who never intends to live in the home, whether they're going to resell it or rent it. Does not matter. If they're not going to live there, they cannot be classified as an owner-occupant. Mm-hmm. So those are, you know, those are the distinctions. There's three types of borrowers: owner-occupant, second home, and investor. I mean, as far as, you know, we in the lending world are concerned. And tonight we're talking about owner-occupant loans, which also covers typically your first-time home borrower. I mean, I have done first-time loans for investors, believe it or not. It's unusual, but people do have done that. So.
Okay. Is there normally, say for instance, you are purchasing this home to live in it, is there any guideline concerning how long you have to live in the property before you can sell it?
Yes and no. First of all, the standard guideline for most programs is 12 months or 1 year. So if you buy a house and you live there for at least a year, and then let's say you get married and you need to buy a bigger house, or you buy the house and you get relocated, but you want to keep the house as an investment property, you know, as long as you meet that 12-month guideline, you're generally fine. However, let's take one of those examples, relocation. Let's say you buy the house to live in it, and 5 months after you buy it, you get a really incredible job opportunity in, you know, another state, so you've got to move, and you decide to sell the house. Once you sell it and you pay off the mortgage, you're fine. There is no guideline that says you can't sell the house and pay off the mortgage earlier than a year.
Okay.
But if you do retain the mortgage, you are expected to live there for at least a year.
Okay. That's great to know.
And I think part of the reason for that would be the non-restriction on the guidelines concerning how long you have to live there is because it's a loan and not a grant. You know, you have to pay it back. Unlike, let's say, when it comes to grant funds, they might not, you know, you might not have to pay the grant funds back if that condition of staying there for, say, 5 years is met. But because this is a loan, this is money that you're being given that you have to pay back. Is that pretty much the thought, Richard?
Well, actually, you bring up a really good point. When somebody does get a grant in addition to their mortgage, usually the grant guidelines, over and above the loan guidelines, will stipulate that they have to stay in the house for typically longer than 12 months. Like some grants, you know, you got to stay there for like 5 years, and it doesn't mean you can't sell the house, but if you do sell the house and move out you know, less than 5 years, for example. Not all grants are written the same way, but that's a common scenario, is that you have to pay back a prorated portion of the grant. So
yes.
If you get a grant for $10,000 and you sell and pay off the mortgage in 3 years, you might have to pay back, you know, 40% or $4,000 of that grant. And it usually will come from the proceeds of the home. So it's not like it's coming out of your pocket, but that's $4,000 less in profit that you'll get from selling the house.
Yes. Because I think it becomes a lien on the property, and therefore it has to be, it's for the purpose of, you know, a person that really needs the funds, and I guess that's a part of the reason also to maintain that home ownership, and unless it's a situation now that you can, and it's not a problem that you just know you have to pay some of that back if you decide to purchase another property.
We see the callers on board. Please, if you have a question, just press 1. We'll bring you on board. You can ask your question. We'll call out the last 4 digits of your phone number. We see you up there, callers, so don't be shy. While you have the expert here on the line, time is running out for this show. So if you have a question, again, while you have the opportunity, please ask it.
Thank you, Richard, so much. You're really, you know, breaking this information down and making it very clear and plain. I mean, I have definitely learned a lot tonight, but we do have a few more questions. Is there a minimum and a maximum loan amount for a person that's considering a renovation loan?
So that's a two-part question. There's the loan ceiling. So like there are statutory loan limits based on location. So for example, the FHA guidelines are driven by what are called MSAs, Metropolitan Statistical Areas. And this is not something that I think the audience needs to, you know, they're not going to be quizzed on this. This is your loan officer's job to guide you through this. But so, for example, in the Richmond MSA, which is Richmond City and I think 6 surrounding counties, the maximum loan amount is $535,900. So say $535,000 roughly. But if you're in like say a less populated, you know, like Louisa area or Northern Neck or someplace like that, most of the other more rural counties and MSAs in Virginia can be as low as the floor, and the floor ceiling, the maximum for those counties is like $331,000, so a lot lower.
Okay.
The conventional loan limit went up 2 years in a row nationally, which was really surprising because it hadn't gone up in years. And now it's $548,000 for a single family under Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, conventional financing. VA is driven by, the veterans' eligibility, and then USDA kind of follows FHA guidelines. Now, another part of that question is there a maximum or a minimum renovation amount that somebody can tack on to the sales price?
Okay.
And that answer is also kind of all over the map. There really is no minimum for a borrower. And this kind of gets back to what we were talking about earlier with the heat. If a borrower is well qualified, and they, you know, they come to me and they say, you know, I just want to borrow, you know, $8,000 or, you know, $13,000 to gussy up my kitchen, you know, that could make sense. And if they don't have any other resources to do that, then yeah, I'm happy to oblige them. But for some borrowers, if the property will pass an appraisal and they have another way to pay for that, then, you know, there's a point at which, you know, I'm going to advise the borrower, even though there's no real minimum, that, you know, let's look at some of the other ways you could possibly pay for that. So the short answer, there's really no minimum. You know, could somebody do a 2 or 3K loan and borrow $1,500 for renovation? Yes. Would I advise that? Probably not. So there really is no minimum. On the ceiling, on the opposite. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I was just saying, yes, I understand. We do have a caller who has a question.
Caller, I'm going to call the last four digits of your...
Okay.
1187, you're on the air with Richard Day. Caller, thank you so much for your patience.
Hi. Thank you so much, Richard, for the wealth of information that you're sharing with us tonight. It's very informative, and it's an eye-opener, so thank you for that. So my question was regarding the restoration loans that you were talking about, how you were saying that sometimes it's better to put it as part of a mortgage instead of just taking a restoration loan on its own because it might be higher interest on it. So if you were going to do it together with the regular mortgage, as you gave the example of the $200,000 house, and the value of the renovation would be like $50,000, and so you were calculated for as a, the whole as a mortgage of $250,000. My question is that is would that be like a second mortgage, or would it be one bulk mortgage, or would it be divided into one part for the purchase of the house for the value, the current value of the house, and the other part for maybe the future value of the house when the house is already all renovated? Would that be just one mortgage, or would it be two?
Yeah. All of the products I've been talking about, they're all the renovation mortgages are always one mortgage. They're, and I'm glad you're asking this question because this kind of goes into another arena. So the mortgages I do, renovation mortgages, are always one product, and we always wrap the purchase price and the renovation into one pile of money. So it's one loan, it's one down payment, it's one mortgage payment, it's one set of closing costs. So it's never separated out. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't another type of loan. I don't do those, but there are other types of loans, standalone loans you can use for home improvement. But I will tell you, they're fewer and far between. In other words, so it's sort of like looking at an equity line. A lot of people go, well, I'm just going to buy the house and I'll put my 5% down and I'm going to take out an equity line for my $50,000 renovation. And what they don't realize is that renovation loans, again, as I mentioned earlier a few times, is based on the future renovated value of the home, whereas equity lines and second mortgages are based on the current value. So under that example I just used, a person wouldn't be able to get $80,000 because unless they bought the house for over $100,000 under market, there's no way they would have enough built-in equity to be able to do that. Now, you can do some small banks, regional banks might do really what I would call just a personal loan, but personal loans have much lower limits on them. I mean, personal loans are typically capped at anywhere from $10,000 to maybe $25,000, and personal loans that are not tied to the property are not tax deductible like mortgages are. So everything I'm talking about, everything I do, renovation mortgages, are all classified as mortgages. So every dollar you borrow and every dollar you pay in interest is tax deductible. Smaller personal standalone loans are not tax deductible. So there's a disadvantage as far as a tax write-off goes. I hope I
answered your question.
Am I still on air?
If I may also just ask the question as well. So if a person, Richard, while we have the caller on the line, if a person already owns a property, what is the difference between, so that renovation loan is in this particular case, would be if a person is planning to purchase. What about a person that is an owner-occupant, already owns a property, and what are their options?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So for somebody, and I do a lot of those. I do a lot of what we call renovation refinances versus a renovation purchase. And a renovation, it's all going to be driven by the cost of the renovation project and the current value and the future value. So whenever anybody calls me, and I get these calls, you know, several times a week, they say, hey, I want to do a renovation mortgage. We already own the house. We want to do an addition, or we want to, you know, got the kitchen or whatever the case may be. We might want to, you know, finish the attic and add two bedrooms, or finish the basement, or build a garage. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons people do renovation refinances. I always ask them, what do you owe? What is the property worth right now? And what's the cost of the renovation? And just based on those three answers, I can very quickly say, yeah, renovation loan is a great option for you. Let's talk. Or, you know what, you don't need a renovation loan. We could just do a cash-out refinance for you, or you can go to another lender and get a home equity line and do it that way.
Okay, well.
Carla, did you have another question?
No. He answered my question. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Richard, I know we're over a little bit, but we have just a couple of more questions, and if we have anyone else that would like to ask you a question, do you have maybe about 10 more minutes?
Oh, I'm good. I got plenty of time.
Okay, all right. That's great. So what would you say would be the best type of property that would work for a renovation loan? Foreclosures. What types of properties?
Owner selling as is.
Yeah, as is. Yeah, I see a lot of that on the market today, because being a seller's market, sellers know they're going to receive multiple offers no matter what. So a lot of people have to, you know, resort to having to purchase a property as is if they don't take advantage of a loan product like this, or don't have the cash.
Yeah. Well, the short answer is, what kind of property is a good property for a renovation loan? And my answer is always, like, every property is a good property for a renovation loan. If it needs work, it's a good property. But yeah, specific inventory, you actually touched on most of them. So, you know, foreclosures, obviously, estate sales, properties being sold as an estate if somebody's passed away, unfortunately, and that property hasn't been updated in, you know, 40, 50, 70 years, whatever. That's a good one. Tax delinquent properties, this is something a lot of people don't know about. But like the city of Richmond, for example, owns, you know, over, and I'm not making this up, over 10,000 properties. Now, a lot of those are lots, but a good chunk of those, probably 20 to 30% of those, maybe more, have old dilapidated structures on them. So that's an outlet to buy a property. Any property that is on the market that, you know, either will not pass an appraisal or is too small. You know, you know the three magic words in real estate: location, 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 right?
Yes.
So let's say they find a property in the perfect location, but it only has two bedrooms. You know, how many people want a two-bedroom house? Not many. Some people do, but a lot of people want at least three bedrooms or more. So, you know, it might be in the perfect location, but it does not have enough room or enough square footage or enough bedrooms or enough bathrooms or whatever. So buy that house in the perfect location and do an addition. Speaking of location, let's say you find a property that's the perfect house, but it's in a cruddy location. Move the house. And I have financed 6 house moves in my career thus far. And they all went off without a hitch, and in all 6 of those cases, we financed the cost of moving the home into the mortgage.
Really?
So when you talk about moving the house, I'm sure there's somebody out there thinking, move the house? How do you move the house?
You know, there's lots of There's lots of videos on moving a house. There's companies that specialize in moving houses. They typically stabilize the house as best they can. They take all the plumbing and detach all the plumbing and the utilities, the electric and everything from the house. And then they very slowly, very carefully jack the house up, and they put, I-beams under it that they attach to a trailer, and they move the house. If it's a brick house, they usually will remove all the brick, and then when the house gets to its new location, they'll either put new brick back on. But what's usually more practical is take the brick off, move the house, and then put on, hardy plank or some kind of siding. Because the brick will not sustain itself in a move. It'll crack and fall apart. Because the house certainly does, move and shift and stuff. But yeah, moving a house is, if you go on YouTube and put in house, moving a house, there are dozens and dozens of videos of houses being moved.
Wow. Okay. Again, learn something new today.
yeah. But I'll tell you, a real common thing, though, is like finishing an attic or doing what we in the industry call a pop a top, where you literally take the roof off and you put on a second story. Or you take an attic and you blow out of the roof and you put on, dormers or gables and expand that level of the house and put, a couple bedrooms and a bathroom or an office or a playroom or whatever the family wants.
Richard, you really makes this sound so exciting. Richard, so just a couple of more questions. Why should a person consider a renovation loan in the market today? What are some of the pros and cons? Which you probably
there's very few cons, so the pros are, they're getting a house and they're getting a house the way they want it. That's probably the biggest one. It does open them up to more inventory, which in this market is really important. So instead of looking at just turnkey, move-in condition, beautiful homes, they can look at all kinds of other homes and then, make those homes the way they really want to make them. One big benefit we haven't talked about are, and I've taken advantage of this myself personally, are historic tax credits. So if somebody happens to buy a home that's in a historic district, they can take advantage of tax credits. And owner-occupants and investors can do this. So let's say, for example, somebody buys a house for $100,000 and they borrow another $100,000 to renovate. In Virginia, owner-occupants and investors are both eligible for the Virginia Historic Tax Credit, which is equal to basically 25 cents for every dollar spent. So under the example I just listed, if it's a $100,000 renovation, then an owner-occupant and an investor could get a tax credit of up to $25,000 if they abide by, DHR guidelines and their tax credits are approved. So there's that. For an investor, it's even bigger. For an investor that's going to keep the house as a rental, they would want to apply for not only the Virginia state tax credits, but also the federal historic tax credit, which is another 20 cents on top of the 25 cents. So in that example, if they did a $100,000 renovation, they could get up to $45,000 in tax credits. And that's the homeowner's money. I mean, that's their money. And the way they use tax credits is every year when they file their taxes, they turn in their credits, and anything they paid into their state or federal taxes, they get all that money back. Or at least at the state level, they can also sell the tax credits at a discounted price, and they can get cash immediately.
That is great information. For people,
yeah.
Definitely.
And then, Yeah, well, and then the third benefit, in addition to having a house that you love and historic tax credits, and the third one, and really the most common one that we already touched on earlier, is built-in equity. You know, you buy a house for, you know, $150,000, you put $50 into it, and it appraises for, you know, every dollar above that is the buyer's, you know, built-in equity.
Wow. This is wonderful information that you've shared tonight. And just one last question. Going back to the stages, I just want to make sure everyone understands this part. When is the actual rate locked in? That's very important to people, Richard. So I just want, when is the rate, when can you lock in the rate?
So legally, a borrower can lock in their interest rate as soon as their loan is a live loan. So as soon as they apply for the loan and they sign their disclosures, they can lock in the rate. However, I'm really glad you asked that. It is my practice to advise my borrowers not to lock in the rate until we have the contractor bid. And there's a couple of reasons for that. But the biggest one is until we have the contractor bid, we don't really know when they're going to close. In other words, until the borrower gets us the contractor bid, they're holding the time clock. But once they get us the contractor bid and we can order the appraisal, then we, the lender, are holding the time clock. And at that point, I'm much more comfortable locking in the rate. And I think it's safer, because the one thing you have to remember, and I'm sure you all know this, is that rates are locked in. The concept of a rate lock-in is something that was created decades ago in the industry, where, because, you know, interest rates on mortgages are like stocks. They change. They can change daily. They can change hourly. And so the industry a long time ago created the lock-in, and that's where the loan officer can get with their lender, their company, and say, okay, the borrower wants to lock in the rate, and then every mortgage company has a secondary market department or a capital markets department, and they lock that rate in and go, okay, your rate is now locked in and guaranteed as long as you close by the end of that lock-in period. So most borrowers will lock in their rate from anywhere from 30 to 60 days. But the thing to remember is that if they don't close by the time the lock-in is expiring, then they either have to let it expire, and then they're subject to whatever the rates are at that time, higher or lower, or they have to pay. Let's say rates are higher and they're like, well, I don't want to lose my rate. Now they're paying extension fees to extend the lock-in period, and that's costly, which is why I think it's more prudent to not lock in your rate until you have a contractor bid, because that way there's a much, much, much better chance that the lender can then get the loan closed within that lock period.
Everybody, you see why we get the experts? You see why we get the experts? This has been a powerful, powerful show filled with lots of powerful, usable information. Richard, we want to thank you so much for being our guest today, everybody. I know that you enjoyed this as much as we have. Can you give your contact information, Richard? Because I know after people hear this show, they're going to want to contact you. How can people reach you?
Yeah, first is my website. I have my own personal renovation website that I've had for several years, and that's fixandfinance.com. And it's really just sort of a 24/7, you know, site that has a lot of the stuff I cover tonight is on that site, so you can go look at it, study it, you know, capture it, embrace it. So fixandfinance.com, fixandfinance.com, all one word. My phone number is 804-855-4421. And again, 804-855-4421. And my email address is my first initial R, Day, so RDAY, at assurancemortgage.com. And I'm easy to find on Google or whatever. You just put in Richard Day, you know, renovation. I'm usually the first or the second heading that pops up.
We really appreciate you coming on and being our guest today, and we want to encourage all of the listeners. This show is going to be archived, so approximately an hour after the show, if you'd like to listen to it again or there's somebody you know that's interested in this type of information, you can share the show with them. Please don't try to remember everything that was said. Just share the link with them, however you got it. And our special guest for today is going to be back on next week. You want to tell them about the show next time?
Absolutely. So, again, this was part one. Next week will be part two. Home renovation loans for real estate investors and non-owner occupants. So Richard already covered a little bit about there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're even thinking about becoming a real estate investor or maybe wanting to make that transition, you already have a home and you're thinking about leasing that home out and purchasing another home and you have some renovations you want to do to even get the house ready for the market or, you know, just, you know, a variety of things that you're just kind of thinking about. Now, between this show and the show next week, which will be next Thursday from 7 to 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can tune in and hear Richard Day again. He's going to, we already know it's going to be a great show.
I'm looking forward to it already.
Absolutely.
Everybody, you can follow this show on Blog Talk by just clicking follow. And then you'll be notified every time we do a show, you'll be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic. So if you enjoyed this, and I know you did, and you want to hear more, then just click follow, and then you'll be notified. And this is what we do. We talk about real estate, and we bring you the experts. And you can tell from today's show that this is information that that you can use and that is on another level. I mean, again, a lot of times you talk to people and they have some information or they might have part of it right, part of it wrong, or depending on who you know, they might have an uncle who knew somebody, cousin that, you know, had a daughter or something, and you don't know what type of information you're getting. So it's always best to get the information from those that actually do the work. So, again, we thank Richard. Thank you so much, my friend. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And just a final point real quick, if you don't mind. You are so right about people that think they know a lot of stuff. I talked to a borrower the other day, and she said something. I won't go into what it was. And I said, where did you hear that? And she told me, and I said, yeah, that's not right at all. So she was about to make a very bad decision based on bad information. And I was like, yeah, no, you don't want to do that. That's going to cost you a lot of money and a lot of heartache. So, but thank you all for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to next week.
Everybody,
so are we. Thank
Richard
you
Day
so much.
With Assurance Financial Group. Google him, look him up, call the numbers, share the show, and we'll see you all next week. Thank you so much again. My name is Juwanza.
And I am Yvette. We appreciate you, and thank you again for your support.
Take care. See you next week.